Those of you who are here on Sunday will know that Heike preached about the temptations of Christ. And so this is a painting of that. It's in the Walker Gallery in Liverpool, which is a nice little gallery if you're ever in Liverpool. It's 5 minutes from the train station. So if you've got a couple of hours to spare, you can pop across. It's got a nice collection of 19th century art particularly. This is by a painter I don't really know, Ari Scheffer, I think he's called. He's not very well known. He was quite popular in the 19th century. But I've chosen it because in her sermon, Heike also talked about Faust. And the same artist also painted this picture of Faust and Mephistopheles, I think he is. Now, I guess you will know something of the story of Faust. I think I'm right in saying there was an actual historical character called Faust, who was a quite a questionable, dodgy conjurer, I suppose, back in the 15th or 16th century in Germany. But we don't really have any real information on Faust. But around this figure, a whole set of collection of legends grew up. Faust presented as a magician who, the story goes, effectively sold his soul to the devil. He was hungry for knowledge and for power, and so cut a deal with the devil, not dealing with the devil directly but with Mephistopheles, who is a fallen angel in the story. And so the deal is that he would be able to have magical powers, or at least command Mephistopheles to do his will. But on dying, his soul would belong to the devil for the rest of eternity. And therefore it's a story which has captured the imagination over the years. There was a famous play by Christopher Marlowe, one of Shakespeare's contemporary back in the 16th century, and a very lengthy work by Goethe in two parts, apparently one of the great works of German literature. So I confess I have not read Goethe. I have read Christopher Marlowe. I'm told that even school children don't read the whole of it. You read Faust part one in German, I think, but nobody really reads part two, though it's very worthy if you do. And by all sorts of other writers. Thomas Mann wrote a very interesting novel based on Faust, set really in the context of the rise of Nazism, selling your soul and at what price was the sort of analogy he was trying to draw. And in Christopher Marlowe's play, if you read that or if you see it, it's in a way, it presents itself as a sort of simple morality tale. Faust is greedy and ambitious, and he sells his soul and he gets his comeuppance. He doesn't do anything really worthwhile with his magical powers. I mean, there are women involved. There are always women involved in these sorts of things, and not in a very edifying way. He doesn't really achieve anything, and he is dragged off by the devil, kicking and screaming at the end of his, I think he has 24 years, so he knows how long he's got. Goethe's portrayal is a little bit more ambiguous. Faust is saved at the end of it, and Goethe seems to portray him in a more favourable light. This painting really is based on Goethe's portrayal. And why I projected up, and interesting, because in fact if you look at the figure of Faust, you look at his facial features and then compare it to the figure of Christ, I mean, it would seem to me that he used the same model, and actually they're very sort of similar in feeling. This Faust here does not look like an evil, lecherous man. There is a sort of Christ-like quality to him, or at least a thoughtful quality. And that's what perhaps comes across in Goethe. But in a way, it's also there in Marlowe's play. Although at first sight, it reads like a sort of morality play. I mean, Christopher Marlowe, as some of you may know, was not a was a bit of a hellraiser himself. It was believed, he was certainly accused of being an atheist, which in the 16th century is quite dramatic. Certainly he's not understood to be a terribly moralistic character. And it's possible to read Marlowe's play as almost a parody. I mean, either he's upholding traditional Christianity or he's almost parodying it. Because I suppose the real question is Faust's desire for knowledge entirely wrong? If you look at other accounts of magicians from the age, there was a real character called John Dee, some of you will have heard of, Dr. Dee, who lived in the Elizabethan period. He lived actually just up the road in Mortlake. If you go into the church there, St. Mary the Virgin, I think it is, they have a plaque to John Dee. And in his own life, he captured the sort of ambiguity of being a scientist and a magician, and it wasn't always very easy to tell the difference. So John Dee was a serious mathematician, and he was quite a pioneer in terms of navigation. He also cast horoscopes. He cast horoscopes for Queen Elizabeth. I mean, he was the court astrologer, which is sort of rather difficult for us to get our heads around. But then he was also interested in crystal balls. He had an accomplice, and they started scrying, I think is the word you use. And seeing angels and getting prophecies from crystal balls. And half the people in his day thought that was magic and witchcraft and evil, and others thought that was sort of proto-science, if you like. Quite difficult sometimes to distinguish between the search for real knowledge and involvement in the occult. It's easy in retrospect, but at the time, it wasn't always very clear. It's not even clear if you look at people like Isaac Newton. We think of Isaac Newton as the great founder of modern science, and the apple falling, apparently that's apocryphal, but anyway, the story of the apple falling and the theory of gravity, and he's certainly, you know, he's seen as the great mathematician and the founder of modern physics. But he was also interested in alchemy, and in sort of biblical prophecies. He was obsessed by the Temple of Solomon, and he thought if you could really understand the what the Bible has to say about Solomon's temple, that held the key to all wisdom and truth. And so a lot of his papers weren't published. Apparently they're not all published even still, which is extraordinary. Isaac Newton's works are not entirely published. His works on more occult subjects were sort of discreetly boxed up, and you can now get hold of them. They're being released on the internet, but really only in the 20th century did it become apparent how deeply he was interested in the occult. And of course he thought that was science. I mean, that was, you know, alchemy was no different from chemistry. It the boundaries are not clear. And I think, therefore, you sort of see that in Goethe's portrayal of Faust particularly. This doesn't look like an evil character. He's a scholar. He's troubled. He's looking for knowledge. He's looking for satisfaction that comes through intellectual inquiry. And he hasn't found that. This comes across in Goethe's account. He hasn't found that in divinity in the existing theological studies or in law or in philosophy. So he's looking for more. And Goethe seems a little bit sympathetic to that. And I suppose I am too. I mean, it relates to two different ways of reading the story of the fall in the Garden of Eden. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil is right there, and God says, do not eat of it. And of course they do eat of it. And in the history of the church, there are slightly different ways of understanding that. In the Western Church, in Augustine, for example, which then influenced Catholicism but also Protestantism, Augustine regards this as an unmitigated disaster. They shouldn't have done it. God said, don't do it. This was forbidden knowledge, and therefore it was absolutely a mistake. But in the Eastern Church, I mean, this is expressed in one of the church fathers called Irenaeus, but it's true in Eastern Orthodox theology, it's not an absolute disaster. Irenaeus understands the eating of the fruit as a kind of as a step towards human maturity. I mean, this sounds heresy to those of us brought up in Western Christianity. But he portrays that Adam and Eve are like children. That's the point. They're like babes. They don't know good and evil. And actually, that's not a mature human condition. That's just childlike. And so, although they eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that brings in tragedy and sin and pain and suffering, so that all still follows. It is also the way towards human maturity. And in Orthodox theology, we can't stay as children all our lives. We have to become adults. And to become adult, we have to experience pain and suffering and death and loss. And this is just what it means to become a mature human being. And you can kind of see that, therefore, in this story of Faust. That with knowledge comes tragedy and suffering and pain. But it's not entirely wrong. Some of you know when they set off the first atomic bomb, the scientists who had been working on it, Robert Oppenheimer was one of the key physicists who'd been working on it. And when, you know, they'd heard the news, some of them were joyful because this meant the end of the war, some of them were in tears, but most of the scientists just received the news in silence. And Oppenheimer famously quoted a line from Hindu scriptures, I have become death, the destroyer of worlds. And for me, that quote sort of captures the ambiguity of knowledge. This incredible scientific breakthrough, and yet the horror that it produced. And yet somehow we're still driven to know and to break through these boundaries. And if I have a vice, it is the thirst for knowledge. There are lots of things I could enjoy in life, but actually that's what I prioritize. If my house burnt down, I mean, I'd get the children out first, but the library would come second. Everything else we can buy again. But the knowledge is the thing that I crave and is my vice. And so when I reflect on that story of the Garden of Eden and the temptation, the question I ask myself is, would I have been able to resist? Amen.